Ever since the collapse of Enron, it's been common to decry corporate executives who get paid a fortune, as it turns out, for leading their companies into bankruptcy. Getting a fortune is an imprecise statement, and the Financial Times newspaper has now lent some precision to the complaint. The paper has compiled the compensation paid to executives at the 25 biggest U.S. firms to go bankrupt over a three-year period. Lionel Barber is U.S. managing editor of the Financial Times. He's in New York. Lionel, how many corporate executives figure in your study?
208 CEOs and corporate directors in this study. And there's another 9 that we didn't include because their salary packages weren't unveiled in company reports, but they walked away with $450 million, and the others, $3.3
billion. $3.3 billion for just a little bit over 200 corporate executives.
It works out quite nicely. 52 of those executives walked away with more than $10 million.
Who are the champion earners at firms that went bust?
Well, our top baron of bankruptcy in our Barons of Bankruptcy series, which started today, is Gary Winnick of Global Crossing. He walked away with a cool $512 million. Then there's Ken Lay of Enron, a coolish $246 million. And then there are several other individuals, often from telecoms companies, by the way, including Global Crossing, Metromedia, and others, who also walked away with over $100 million.
Who is K.B. Chandrasekhar?
Wonderful story here, and we're going to profile that company, Exodus Communications, based on the West Coast, in tomorrow's newspaper. He is an Indian-American entrepreneur who started this company with a mere $5,000. He then saw the company grow and cashed out in 99. Total package was $130
million. $130
million.
And how soon after that did the company go bankrupt?
A couple of years later. I think we need to be clear that we must be careful to distinguish between individuals who may have invested some of their own money in the company and did very well in a bull market and then cashed out, and others who perhaps held on a bit longer and then were selling shares maybe when the company was going down.
I suppose that a CEO could argue that whatever vast fortune he may have made, either in salary or in stocks, was compensating him for the great successes that preceded him up to that point, and he shouldn't be held accountable for what happened afterwards. What do you make of that argument?
Well, I think, Bob, that that's an interesting argument. The only problem is what do you do with a company that's never actually made a profit? And in these instances, some of these companies never actually made money. Their shares went up, but they were not making real money. Their shares went up because people were making a bet that they would make money sometime in the future, and that their losses were largely because of very, very substantial capital investment. But it seems to me that the rewards for failure are somewhat substantial.
As you've mentioned, some of these companies never actually made a profit, but that can't be all of them. Of the 25 largest bankruptcies, Kmart at one time, for example, was a profitable company, no?
Yes, some of these companies were definitely profitable. Some, by the way, like Federal Mogul, the auto parts maker, they were brought down by acquisitions of companies that, in fact, later were crippled by asbestos suits. So you couldn't put them in quite the same category as the telecoms companies or those companies that were involved in building the infrastructure of the internet but then got massively overextended.
Are there any moves afoot to try to get some of these corporate officers to pay back some of the money they made while leading companies that ultimately went bankrupt?
Well, our understanding is that the authorities are looking at ways to somehow salvage something from the wreckage and recoup losses. We're in fact investigating that story even as I speak, and I think there will be something in tomorrow's newspaper. I think as well there are some real serious questions about the use of stock options and the way in which stock options may actually have led to, in effect, perverse incentive, that there was an artificial interest in boosting the share price, which then allow people then to sell out and make a lot of money.
Lionel, thanks for talking with us once again.
It's a great pleasure, Bob.
Lionel Barber is U.S. managing editor of the Financial Times. He spoke to us from New York.